We continue our study of the wisdom literature of the Old Testament, those books, primarily poetry, which express the values and expressions of religious life for Israel and, of course, continuing into the Christian era in the Christian tradition. We've looked already at Job and Psalms and Proverbs, and it's time to take a deeper look into Ecclesiastes, not so much now in terms of what's happening, but what are the implications. When we began this study, I suggested that there were three major ways in which the book of Ecclesiastes understands the possibilities of the world in which we live. We call these worldviews, call them perspectives on life, perspectives on how the world functions, but the worldview options are basically three, and all of world religions and philosophies of life are taken from or derived from these three. First of all, there's the closed system option, in which the world itself is a complete entity unto itself. There's no God outside the system. There's no power of intelligence that drives the system other than the simple laws that are inherent to the system. Human life is part of that accidental development of actions and activities, and it has no more meaning than any other object. And in that context, the Bible could be understood as an attempt to give meaning to something that is inherently meaningless. The Bible is simply another human product that's attempting to provide some guidance or some help along the way, but does not linger with any connection to a higher power. And this is one of the things that the writer of Ecclesiastes is responding to throughout the book. The writer of Ecclesiastes is saying that if that happens to be true, or if that happens to be our perspective on life, then there truly is not any meaning, ultimate meaning or daily meaning, because even the day-to-day activities of our lives have no larger purpose. We exist and we do these things, but we could not do these things, and in fact we could not exist and things would not be any different. So there is no inherent long-term or even immediate meaning from the closed system perspective. Now, the book of Ecclesiastes doesn't probe deeply the idea of what I call impersonal intelligent design, but it does infer some things about this. The impersonal intelligent design is a perspective on life and the realities that we find around us in which they are themselves a living entity. There is transcendence, but not transcendence outside the system, like a creator God. It is the system itself which is somehow alive with meaning or purpose, whether it's highly intelligent, whether it is intuitive or not, but there is a drive or a purpose or existence and a life force to the system. And it's usually seen in that combination of life and time. We can't really explain what life itself is, but we know where it is and where it doesn't appear to be. We can't explain time, but we know that we move through time, and that time is sort of the regulator that keeps us all on track doing things in consort with one another. These are the creative edges that shape existence in the closed system. In this way of looking at things, human life is meaningful insofar as it plays out its intended role to support or participate in the life of the system. We do not have meaning as individuals. We do not have meaning as entity bearers ourselves, but we are rather important insofar as we participate in the life of the whole. And in fact, it is our lives that are insignificant to the point where eventually our lives must be lost. In the same manner as any virus or bacteria in our bodies, if it were to take on a will or a design of its own, would be harmful to the body as a whole. In fact, we must lose our individual identity in order to participate in the greater good. And so you have in various religions like Hinduism and Buddhism that insofar as we are aware of our individual identity, we are removed from our ultimate destiny. And when we arrive at our ultimate destiny having shed ourselves of the karma that accretes to those who have not lived appropriate to the system, we ultimately lose our individual identity and merge back into the oneness of all being. In other words, if we try to have meaningful purpose of our own significance, we actually lose whatever the system believes our purpose to be. And only when we lose our sense of self do we participate in the whole. The Bible in this way becomes a record of and reflection upon a design that is larger than ourselves and in which we ought to participate. Now, of course, you can see things from the closed system and the impersonal intelligent design system that reflect in the various religions of our world. For instance, scientific naturalism, which simply says things exist because they exist, there's no God, and things go along in an evolutionary changing manner according to rules that are in the system. We don't know why they're in the system, but they simply are in the system. And the ultimate value is survival. So species survive when they adapt. It's not as much in important that individuals survive, but there is some of that too. But ultimately, you and I have no great significance. And that's the lament of the writer of Ecclesiastes early on. Nothing has meaning in and of itself. And also the impersonal intelligent design, where time becomes one of the markings of the intelligence of the system. Well, that's not exactly the case either, says the writer of Ecclesiastes, because it is not in time that our meaning is found. If it were in time, then we would stay in time and be bound to time in a delightful way. But after in Ecclesiastes 3, that listing of the variety of things that are coming to us in time, the writer of Ecclesiastes steps out of the system of time and says, God has set eternity in the hearts of men. And the meaning there is that even just participating in the system itself is not sufficient to give us ultimate purpose, meaning, or identity. And that's where the third worldview option comes in, the biblical worldview option. It's shared by other monotheistic religions, each of which explains it in its own way. There's the Israelite religion, which becomes Judaism. There's Islam, monotheistic religions, which understand there to be a creator God who creates the system in which we live and continues to live in connection with the system. Each religion explaining the dynamics of that relationship in slightly different ways. But from an Israelite Christian perspective, there's a creator who created the world and the universe in which we live, and not only created these things, but planned and intended things to be as they are. That doesn't mean there can't be any change or the changing, evolutionary changing within the system that is part of the slowly unfolding of God's greater designs. But we can't talk about evolutionism and the creator-creation open system in the same value. It is not that the system creates itself, but a God who creates the system. Human life is honored. Honored because this is what God intended, that the worlds would be the place where humankind would live, and humankind is uniquely responsive to God. Now, humankind has been compromised. That's part of the freedom allowed to those who can respond like God in love, choices of love with and toward one another. But also, human life is redeemable. And here's a great thing that is found within the Christian context, within the Israelite Christian context, that even when mistakes, errors, sins, and intentional wrong things happen, God stands above and beyond it. And that becomes part of the great hope of the writer of Ecclesiastes. The Bible, in this sense, is part of a divine human redemptive link in which we who have lost our ability to understand these worldview options and tend on our own to move toward one of the first two, the closed system or the impersonal intelligent design, we are reminded again that they are incomplete or incorrect, and there's something larger and better and bigger at stake here, and that is that God seeks an ongoing relationship with humankind, even though humankind may not necessarily show its worthiness of that. God intends for us to be in relationship with God. And that brings us to the outline of Ecclesiastes once again and the overview of the whole thing. That prologue up front expresses one of the other worldview options. That apart from the third worldview option, everything is indeed meaningless because by ourselves we carry no permanent significance. And whatever we do is lost over time and we fade away and we're forgotten and we're gone. And there are a variety of meaningless things that the writer of Ecclesiastes explores. Wisdom, pleasure, folly, oppression, toil, friendlessness, political advancement, unfulfilled vows to God, and amassing wealth. All of those things we've taken a look at. There's that sense that time somehow keeps regulated, but notice when we read in Ecclesiastes 3 about the regulatory nature of time, that only when we find ourselves stretching for and reaching for something beyond time do we begin to find ourselves connecting with the truth. And so the teacher gives us proverbs to stay wise or to stay sane in the changing fortunes of our lives and to call us to reach beyond. His ultimate observations are that the meaning of life must be found beyond life in God alone. All of life is progressing toward a common end, so we have to enjoy life while we have it and be wise. And what does wisdom mean in the book of Ecclesiastes? It means to live boldly, that is, not to fear the things that are resident in our world, even though they may not in and of themselves carry a sense of meaning. To live joyfully because there is a purpose and we are not left to evil designs that will ultimately overthrow us. And to live godly because if in fact there is meaning, it has to be found in a God who is outside the system. And that's what the book is all about. So over against the other worldviews, the assumptions in Ecclesiastes are these, that the universe is in fact the kingdom of God against evolutionary naturalism or against panentheistic historicism, that the earth is specially prepared as a domain for humanity, made in the image of God to share a creative stewardship and relational love, that humanity is in rebellion against its creator. That's why things are wrong and why there's oppression and folly and toil and all of those kinds of things. At least in part because of the unique characteristics of humankind, the sense of us being the imagers of God, loving as God loved us and having the capacity for free choice in love, the Creator has chosen not to annihilate this world as someone might throw out something that was mistaken or bad, but rather to work with this world and with us as humans to redeem this world. And the redemptive initiative is the divine mission explained and interpreted in the Bible. That's why Ecclesiastes is part of this worldview system. And the Bible has an authoritative hold on our lives because it is the voice of God to us, as well as our voice of participation through the covenant back to God. And so we become part of a larger divine purpose, not only to be redeemed, but to participate in seeking to share this message of redemption with others, which is why the book of Ecclesiastes exists, so that others may understand the true values of life and then come to that redemptive purpose to being reconciled back to full communion with the Creator. And that's why the writer of Ecclesiastes ends, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth." There are two strategies for that redemption in the Bible, of course, through ancient Israel, so that the other nations may come and see what's going on. And then in the New Testament, when Jesus fulfills all of God's intentions for humankind, then also the community itself is spread to the ends of the world, seeking to draw it all back to God. At its face value, Ecclesiastes is certainly rather dark and depressing, especially in those opening sessions, because the immediate message we gain from it is almost screams in our faces. All we do is, and everything that happens is ultimately meaningless and has no lasting value. But as we begin to spend time with the writer of Ecclesiastes, with the wise teacher and preacher, the more moderate message comes to play. life goes on, so let's make the best of it and be more wise than foolish about it. And if we spend time with the writer of Ecclesiastes on an extended period and try to put ourselves in his shoes and see the world through his eyes, the ultimate reflection is this kind of thing. Life can only mean something if there is a God who sets the values, for instance, for time and morality in place, and gives us a link to eternity, which confirms our right to exist. That's why God has set eternity in our hearts. Though even among the individually meaningless actions of day-to-day living, we stretch and reach for something which only God can supply, an eternity that's set in our hearts. Now that's a great message, and that's essentially the big picture of the book of Ecclesiastes, one filled with wisdom. More on these things you can find in my book, Covenant Documents, Reading the Bible Again for the First Time.